Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of South Geek News. I'm Donovan.
And I'm Ben.
Samuel is not with us for this episode. He has been knee-deep in alligators, even though he doesn't live in a state that has alligators.
And they have him at the zoo.
Oh, that's true. Okay. That's fine. So, Ben, what have you been up to for the last 2 weeks?
Mental health crisis.
Really?
Yeah. I finally finished the psychiatry paperwork today, but I still haven't taken it in.
Okay, so you've done the paperwork.
Yeah.
But you haven't...
And I've spent a lot of time correcting errors in their forms.
Okay.
The forms just pissed me off. It was weird. But
okay.
In other news, I shifted my desk yesterday.
Okay.
And a 10 terabyte hard drive hit the floor.
Oh, no.
And it's dead.
Oh, job. No, no.
But best day I've had. Not because of that, but I had a good day. And what I lost on that drive was like my entire music collection, all my MP3s.
Oh, no.
Because I was holding them there.
Yeah.
Because my music collection was between storage appliances. Mm-hmm. So I just put it there. I'm not going to miss it because I haven't touched that in years. I mean, some shit's in there is 20 years old. I'm probably never going to listen to it anyway because I always listen to Spotify. So not a huge loss. Bunch of stuff. I have data sets from Hugging Face and GitHub repos, but I can just...
Refresh my memory. What the hell is Hugging Face?
Hugging Face, I mean, I can't even explain it, but it's basically a place where people put data sets and learning models, and you can even rent compute time from them to run a machine learning model.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I know so far.
Okay.
I just know that I want to say the DeepSeek model was put up on Hugging Face. That's where I got it. That's where I was running it from.
That's the reason why that sounds familiar. Yeah. Okay.
Other than that, just some backups, and it was a holding space because stuff that I didn't want to keep on the main drive.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I'm going to miss anything. All my Linux distros.
All the ones we talked about.
Yeah. All those old ones. But not a big deal. I was never going to use them, and I can probably just download them again, even back down to like Fedora 4 if I wanted to.
Slackware 1.0.
But yeah.
I mean, it happens. My music collection's probably, I don't even know how big it is.
Yeah.
I cannot recall the last time I actually went looking for something to actually listen to anything in that collection. And some of the stuff I actually pulled out and put in for the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And I was running the radio station where it was pulling all of the music off of the Synology. But I kept having this disconnect problem. I don't know what it was. So it's sitting on now the entire radio station music collection sitting on that 4 terabyte drive right there connected straight to the machine that's running the radio station software.
Hmm.
I haven't had a lick of problems with it since then.
Yeah. The last time I reached into the library was to find an old Bob Dylan song off of the Natural Born Killers soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Because my daughter was talking about something and I wanted to hear that song. But, oh, well.
Yeah. You know, 10 terabyte drives are not cheap either.
Well, it wasn't full. But yeah, I think that was about a $300 drive.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get some refurbed 10 terabyte drives a lot cheaper than that now.
Yeah. I mean, this was one that I had ordered. Well, I'd ordered several to offload pictures for clients and just had that one left over. So I...
Yeah, because the 4 12s that I have in that Synology over there, which is all it'll hold is 4 drives, I think I paid about $600 for all 4 of them.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, and they were not refurbed, but factory...
like recertified?
Recertified, yeah. They were factory recertified drives. So I was like, that's not bad. And Tyler goes into this whole price per gig, and there's a threshold, and if he sees... I forget what it is. I guess if it's under $1 a gig or something like that, or what. Anyway, the way he looks at it, he's like, yeah, that's pretty good buy. And then if the ratio is reverse of that, he's like, it's not worth it. So I'm like, okay.
Oh, I did. Finally, I've been running out of thumb drives. I'll create a thumb drive for whatever Windows or Linux install. Linux,
whatever.
And yeah. I don't want to overwrite it because I may want to load something else with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just run out and I've had to go and what's on this one? On this one? So I just ordered 20 64 gig flash drives.
What manufacturer?
Kingston.
Yeah, it's not bad.
One of these?
Yeah. Cool. And 64 gig is a good size.
Retail on these is $7 a piece.
That's not what you paid.
No.
No. Because I know I bought...
Now, my cost was like $368.
I think I bought like a 4 or 6 pack of SanDisk 32s a few years ago. And I don't think I paid more than like $16 or something for like 6 of them or whatever it was.
I thought, I'm running out of drives.
Yeah.
I'll pick one up and go, oh, this one's, but it's only 4 gigs. So I just.
And not 3.0.
Yeah.
I've run into that. I've got a small one over there on my desk that I'll just grab. It's kind of like the, I don't care, I'll blow it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's only four terabytes. That's a damn one. I think it's only 4 gig, but it's 2.0.
Mm.
So when I go to write to it, then I realize, oh, shit, that's right. This is one of those slow MFers. So, well, that sucks that you lost a drive, but at least it's not like,
yeah,
you know, the...
I mean, if it was important shit, it would be backed up.
Yeah. Yeah, at least it wasn't bank notes or bond notes or...
A crypto wallet.
Yeah. That's actually more accurate. The fucking crypto wallet, man. If that was the only copy of it.
Oh, it would be being shipped to the data recovery center somewhere.
It's like, I don't care how much this costs. I'll be able to pay you once I get that wallet back.
Yeah. It turns out you get 0.0000001 Bitcoin. And you go, well, maybe that wasn't worth it.
Yeah, I mean... What is Bitcoin trading at right now? Like 90,000 or something?
Let me see what my Bitcoin is doing right now.
I have no Bitcoin at all.
I have some in Robinhood. I don't keep a wallet.
Yeah.
But my...
I don't have it. I don't have it in Rob. I thought about it, but...
0.0179 1344.
And it's going for... $117,522.50. Yeah,
0.0179 1344 is worth about $2,100.
That's not bad. I mean, depends on when you bought it. I mean, if it
I
was
didn't
down,
buy it. Well, I mean, I bought it, but I mined Monero on free electricity for a couple of years. Ended up with like $120 worth of Monero.
Yeah.
And
you do a conversion?
I put it in Kraken, which is it's an exchange.
Yeah.
Cashed it out. Or at some point, I think it was worth about $600 by the time I finally cashed out. Cashed it out with that money in Robinhood, bought Bitcoin at somewhere around 70,000 or 60,000. I don't know. So I've paid nothing for that.
Well, you've got some gains there.
Yeah, I'm not
you bought
selling
it around
it.
60 or 70. Yeah,
I'm not selling it because I'm going to pay damn taxes on it.
Yeah, I know. The hell with that. Man, I feel for that guy years and years ago. You remember the story that he bought pizza with Bitcoin?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, dude, if you had held on to that.
Yeah, that's like a $200,000 pizza now.
Yeah, something like this. It's nuts, man. Absolutely hysterical.
And I was skittish about Bitcoin when it was $16. You know, that was like 2011, 2012.
I wish I'd have known back then what
if I could have just,
know now.
If I could have just spent a couple $100 on, I don't know.
Just held on to it.
10 or 15 Bitcoin and just
you could retire.
Sit on it. Yeah.
You could probably retire right now. Or definitely not have to be concerned about.
I wouldn't have a mortgage payment.
You wouldn't have a mortgage payment. Yeah. That's true. That's true. Yeah, me either. I'd have done something like that. Well, anything else other than trying to, you know, destroying a 10 terabyte drive?
No. I'm catching up on stuff. I did cross the 100 terabyte threshold, though.
Oh, on the transfer?
My total cloud storage right now is over 100 terabytes.
Mm. Wow. That's, wow.
Oh, and we're not even halfway.
I know.
Finished pushing archive, so.
Wow.
I got to go slow because I feel like one month they're going to go, this cloud storage is kind of expensive.
Like, let it just gradually go up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to see that sudden spike. But yeah, it is what it is. I mean, that's what happened to me. I don't have anywhere close to that amount of storage, but mine started going from like, you know, single digit dollars, and then it got up into the double digits. It was like, normally it'd be like $7 or $8, you know. Mm-hmm. Then it was like 13 or 14. Then the next month it was 18 or 19. And then when it started hitting $30 a month, I was like, what is going on here? And I think I've told this story before, but that's where I had the one client that I had, because I use Backblaze. Mm-hmm. And it's connected to their Synology, so it does an automatic, you know, real-time updates.
Yeah.
Except the bucket policies were set for all revisions. Mm. So I dug into the reports, and that's where I started seeing the storage start just slowly going up. And I was like, where is this coming from? And then that's when I was able to narrow it down and find that it was that one client. And I didn't have like two revisions or maybe even three. I had unlimited. And I'm like, Donovan, what the hell are you doing? You don't need that many. So yeah, it was nuts. So the last 2 weeks, what I've been working on is Windows 11 PC upgrade and replacements with one particular client. Finished that up this past Saturday. And now it'll be just, you know, I call it the bypass method, but it's the, you know, the Windows 11 upgrade that you can tell it, you know, don't check for TPM, don't check for CPU. Mm, yeah. And it warns you and says, hey, you're doing this. And they've agreed to that because I can't in good conscience and in good faith replace a machine that's a sixth or seventh generation i5 just because of Microsoft's absurdity of going, well, you need to have at least this processor. No, it's arbitrary. You just decided to do that because you can be bastard sometimes. And for the most part, they've been happy with them. We deployed 13.
Good.
And I've got another client that I'm replacing their two machines next weekend. Well, actually, I'm picking them up on a Friday afternoon. Going to do all the work on Saturday and then have it back to them that Monday morning to get them back going. But it's one of my AC clients. That's been pretty much it.
Yeah, just plugging along.
Yep. That is true. All right. Well, how about we talk about some tech news?
Okay. I think that's what this show's about.
Yeah. Last time I checked. Microsoft's Ultra Compact Windows 11 25H2 update is here. Apparently, you can get it in a single restart.
Just one?
I guess. That's what they say.
I'll believe it when I see it.
So, ZDNet, Microsoft Windows 11 25H2 is now rolling out as a compact one restart update that shares a code base with 24H2, but enables more features, promising better stability plus extended support through October of 2027 versus October 2026 for 24H2. Better stability. I would definitely like better stability.
If they fix Explorer.
The File Explorer is terrible, man. I mean, I think that's one of the first things Tyler complained about. I mean, he's done a side-by-side comparison of a machine that had Windows 11 on it, mm-hmm, and how it behaved in his interaction with it. And then he blew it away and put Windows 10 on it. And it was like 50 to 75% better response with 10 than 11. I think Microsoft made an error when they decided to shit can 10 and go with 11, but they're too far in. They can't do anything else now.
I think there's a lot going on in the background that, like, it's studying your habits and spying on you.
Probably. I mean, there are various sites out there that are like, these are the nine things that I disable right after a brand new Windows 11 install and all of this other kind of stuff. So I don't know. But yeah, if this one will provide better stability, I'm all for it. Also has Titan Security under the Secure Future Initiative, Wi-Fi 7 support, quick machine recovery and refinements to the taskbar, file explorer, and task manager. But there are some known issues to watch for. Some protected TV, Blu-ray and DVD playback glitches. Enterprises, you've got errors installing .msu files from certain network shares.
What the fuck?
What the fuck is a .msu file?
Microsoft update. It's a manual update.
Oh, it's a Mac. That's right. I always got them down in .cab files, the .cab.
Yeah, I've seen that, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Microsoft update's an individual update.
Yeah, because I know that there's a repository that they have. I forget where it's at, but it's... You can drill down. It's very webbish. 90s? Yeah, I was going to say very 90s.
Yeah. But it works.
Yeah, it works. I have no qualms about it. It's just like, wow, this is like in the corner of the Microsoft ecosystem that nobody... They just throw this shit in there and it's like, oh, okay, whatever. It's a table.
Yeah.
Just with links.
Some guy's been working there for the last 65 years.
Yeah.
That's his job. He's got one desk and he maintains that shit.
Yep. Where's his stapler? So you can get 25H2 via Windows Update, toggle get the latest or manually through Microsoft Download Page, Installation Assistant, Media Tool, or ISO. When I first saw this article today, I was like, maybe I should go get this and put this on. No, I'm not.
Well, they're going to be pushing it to clients.
Yeah.
We got to get ahead of it.
Yeah, that's true. I know for the longest time, I pushed out a registry edit that prevented the machines that could upgrade to Windows 11, but they wouldn't. It was a way to block it.
Yeah, we used to have a program called Never 10. We didn't want Windows 7 to update to 10.
Yep. Oh, man, Windows 7. That was a nice operating system.
Yeah, it lasted a while.
10 became a really good one.
Yeah.
I mean, even Tyler would tell you that he thinks it's around like 1702 or 1803 or whatever.
A long time ago.
Is when it finally got good. But I mean, it's 10 years old now and I'm like, but it still works. It works really great.
Yeah.
So anyway, yes, I have not replaced that monitor.
It's just throwing me off.
I know. We could turn it off. All right. Next up, something I really did not care about.
Yeah. I was going to swap with you and alternate reading articles, but I didn't bother reading this article.
Okay. Well, I'll read it and then you can have the next one.
Okay.
Because there's one here I thought you would, there's one further down. I think
I think it's on the next page.
Yeah, I think it's on the next page. So apparently Amazon had an event yesterday. This is over at Wired. At its fall hardware showcase, Amazon introduced refreshed Echo Show models with upgraded 13 megapixel cameras, better audio, and new integrations like Aura sleep tracking and Fandango ticketing, all available for pre-order now. Alexa Plus, powered by large language models, is expanding in early access, free for Prime members, but $20 a month otherwise if you're not a Prime member, and will appear on both Echo devices and third-party brands like Sonos and BMW. Amazon also launched three new 11-inch Kindle Scribe models, including the premium $630 ColorSoft, boasting faster performance, reduced pen latency, and a thinner, lighter aluminum build, of which none of these products I have one iota of interest of buying.
I'm looking for a tablet that I can draw with, but I don't know that I want a dedicated device.
You want something like an iPad
with pencil.
Okay.
Or a Wacom screen, but
yeah, something
I kind of
like
want something portable so I can sit in a chair or I can go
to your best bet would be an iPad then.
Yeah.
It's just pricey. It's just pricey. Because honestly, to do that, you'd want an iPad Pro.
Yeah, I'd want a screen that is about as large as a sheet of paper. So
yeah, and the iPad Pros are going to go for, let me have the buy button. Good God. So 11 or 13-inch model. 13-inch model starts at $12.99.
Man, that's more than half of my Bitcoin investment.
it can get more expensive. That's just so we go black, 256 gig start off. Do you want standard glass or nano texture glass? You can't get it. I'm sorry. You have to go with standard glass. Wi-Fi, no engraving. Yeah, $12.99.
And add $100 for the pencil.
Oh, yeah. You want a Pencil Pro.
A what?
Yeah, you want a pencil.
There's the two different versions of a pencil now?
There's a pencil and there's a Pencil Pro.
With the eraser.
The pencil is USB-C, $79. The Pencil Pro is $129. So we're going to add $129 because we have the very best for Ben.
All right. Well, just let me know when it gets here. I'll come pick it up.
And Jesus Christ. Yeah.
I just want to draw pictures. So I know. It's just going to be colored pencils and paper right now.
Can you get it in a bigger screen than 13? Or is 13 the biggest they have? Yeah, 11 or 13. And it starts at $7.99. So, you know, that might be better. Might be better for you.
Pass.
Yeah. But yeah, I think Amazon has, I just don't think they're a contender anymore. They did tell, it wasn't listed here, but they are replacing their Fire OS and their TVs with something called, I think it's called Vega OS, something like that. I don't know what the hell that is. I think it may be a more streamlined version of Android, because that's all Fire OS is a fork of Android. So that really and truly only runs their own applications out of their app store effectively. Can you get other Android apps on it? In a way, yeah. But yeah, the Echo, who the hell cares? I mean, they've lost their ass on Echo. They're still losing. Yeah, they're still losing. It's not making any money.
I mean, so. I could do without them.
I don't have them. I mean, the only two I've said are sitting over on the shelf. I haven't been plugged up in years. So anyway, kudos to Amazon, whatever.
They're just doing some shit they're going to throw away later.
I've got a dead Kindle over there that I need to like smash with a hammer and throw it in the trash.
Yeah.
So, all right, next up.
DoorDash's new delivery robot rolls out into the big, cruel world. DoorDash has unveiled Dot, its new food delivery robot now operating in Phoenix. Why are these things not melted on the sidewalk?
At least it's not Portland.
Why did they choose Phoenix?
At least it's not Portland.
I mean, they could have but Omaha. Phoenix. Omaha's fair weather.
Yeah, Phoenix, but it's a dry heat.
It still melts shit. I mean, the people still keep oven mitts in their glove compartment so they can handle the steering wheel.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a
real thing.
I did not know that.
Airplanes can't take off sometimes because the air is too hot. Cannot generate enough lift.
Wow.
That's...
I did not know that was a
Phoenix?
Thing. Okay. Why Phoenix? Yes.
Anyway.
Well, maybe because if it can survive Phoenix, it can survive anything.
Now try South Georgia. But there's no city down here where they'd put them.
Yeah, that's true. Macon, maybe. But Valdosta, but then you'll get, you know... destroyed by the next hurricane.
Valdosta's not designed for that kind of thing.
It's not.
Anyway, they're betting on automation despite other companies abandoning similar efforts. Delivery bots once surged in popularity during the pandemic, but Amazon and FedEx scrapped their projects, and surviving players like Starship Technologies and Serve Robotics have struggled to expand beyond niche campus markets. Experts say delivery robots face tougher challenges than robo-taxis with limited funding. What? Who's funding? I mean, all they got to do is put more money in it.
Mm-hmm.
And computing power making growth slower, though DoorDash hopes Dot can carve out a viable role in the crowded delivery space.
I see no use case for this at all, unless it's college campuses.
We don't live in that kind of area. Like that, we would never see...
Mm-mm.
One of those Fisher Price looking Dot delivery things.
I mean,
6 hours on a charge. It would take 6 hours for that thing to get from the center of town to my house.
It looks ridiculous. I mean, I have watched a video. I think MKBHD did one earlier this year. This company that is trying to, they're trying to innovate in the drone delivery business.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have a chance, but even still, I mean, I can either have it shipped the traditional way. If it's food, I'll go get it.
Yeah.
You know,
we have to anyway.
Well, yeah, because where I know out here, Domino's does not deliver.
Yeah, nobody delivers to my place.
Papa John's used to deliver here, but I quit buying Papa John's because A, their pizza is too damn expensive, and B, it sucks. Domino's pizza is better. And so, you know, we get a deal. We just go get it, $7.99, you know,
yeah.
Go pick it up. So, I don't know. It looks fucking ridiculous.
I think it's a fun thing to see happen.
I mean, I would.
But I've got no use for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. I'd watch it.
I mean, if I were in San Francisco at a hotel or at Airbnb or something, I'd try it just to see if, just to watch the robot come up.
Yeah. Yeah. Just have the experience.
Yeah. And then the novelty would wear off and then I would go help myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who is Tilly Norwood? Backlash to the AI generated actor explained. I actually saw this come up on Philip DeFranco show yesterday. So Tilly Norwood, an AI-generated actor created by Dutch comedian Aline van der Velden, Studio Jicoa, I guess is how you pronounce it. I don't know. Is drawing sharp criticism as talent agencies consider signing her, which is a first for Hollywood. Van der Velden envisions Norwood as the next Scarlett Johansson, but actors and directors warn AI performers threaten livelihoods and human artistry. Emily Blunt called the idea terrifying, while director Luca I don't know how to pronounce this name. Guadagnino. Anyway, said it marks the end of the industry as we know it. SAG-AFTRA blasted the concept as stolen performances that exploit real actors without consent, while Van der Velden defended Tilly as a creative art form meant to expand storytelling, not replace humans.
All right, so what's your take on this one?
Okay, so one, very, very beautiful, AI generated. Okay.
Yeah, she is.
So I can almost see where I'm stumbling all over this because I don't really know how I feel. I agree with the actors. You know, number one, I think something like this is beneficial if it can work in concert with the actors, not replace the actors. Okay, number one. Number two, I can envision where actors could get screwed out of this because production companies will look at this and go, well, instead of paying Scarlett Johansson $20 million, we'll just make the movie with a couple of real actors and this AI generated, and we ain't got to pay her shit.
Well, you'll have to pay
the company.
Yeah.
Yeah. That owns the rights to her.
It's a new chapter in intellectual property.
She can also be exploited. And I say she because, well, we're...
Oh, yeah. She could be a porn star, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one thing that was actually brought up was the fact that you can make her do anything.
Yeah. I mean, that's... Yeah.
You
could probably make her do stuff that other actors would
not do.
Would not agree to.
Yeah. Yeah, and that does kind of bother me because... There's a lot of stuff that I'm seeing on Instagram, and I don't know why it fell into this, but you'll be scrolling through Instagram, Facebook, all of it,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see a version of, say, like Wonder Woman or Supergirl or whatever, and you can immediately tell that it's AI generated.
Yeah.
But it puts these characters in some very compromising positions where, you know, the villain is like tying them up, and I mean, there's not rape or any kind of sexual assault, but it seems to stop right before that.
It's edgy.
It's very edgy, and yeah. And it's just freely available there, and you know,
yeah. Well, they'll create it if they make money off of it.
Yeah,
But my thing is, I watched the latest Captain America movie with Anthony Mackie, I think.
Yeah.
We're willing to accept that as a cinematic experience, but how much of it was physically built?
Probably not a lot of it.
So if you have an AI actor, it's just part of the background. I mean, it's part of the, if they create a good experience with it, props to them. I'm not going to follow, I'm not following Tilly on Instagram.
Yeah,
but,
no.
If they create an enjoyable cinematic experience, all better to them.
I could kind of see where maybe use it for background actors and things like that if you need to. But then again, you know, there's I guess inside of the SAG-AFTRA, there's like this whole thing about background actors or
extras
yeah. and what have you. And so now you're cutting out their potential livelihood. I mean, it kind of lines up with like what's happened here in Georgia, where Georgia was, we were the hotbed. Every Marvel movie up until like the last one was made here in Georgia, yeah, basically.
Walking Dead was made here.
The Vampire Diaries were made here as a television show, a lot of stuff. All of that's gone. They've gone over to different countries now because, and that's put like 200,000+ people up in North Georgia out of work because they were betting on this money train that had become Marvel and these other, because Georgia had some very good tax incentives on that. And apparently we no longer compete. So I can kind of see now that if that's the case, keep your costs low. AI-generated actors and actresses, make a movie.
Computer-generated environments instead of filming in a small town. You could just create a small town. What's the difference?
Yeah.
Should we be against creating these environments to film in?
Yeah, that's like, I know Star Trek Strange New Worlds uses this. I think Star Trek Discovery used it. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a room and one entire wall is just one gigantic screen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like fucking huge. And then they project, not like project, but they put on that screen, like the very background. Let's say they're on a planet and there's a bunch of mountains in the background and all of that. The only thing that's really real is probably just like 25 feet of where the actors are actually standing and all the props. But as far as the way it's shot, when you go to watch it on television, it looks like a landscape that you could go and physically touch. That's artificially generated. It's not AI necessarily, but...
No, but it's not a real place.
It's not a real place.
And you don't have crews of people. You don't have the whole crew spending money in a small community. Do it if it works. I mean, clearly, if it doesn't work, the movie's going to suck.
True.
I'd like to see where it goes. I wouldn't want to cut that short.
AR. It's called an AR wall, known as a virtual production wall. It's a large circular LED screen that displays pre-rendered computer-generated 3D environments in real time behind the actors. This technology uses motion tracking software to make the digital background shift in sync with the camera's movements.
Yeah, I figured that.
Providing a more immersive and realistic experience for the actors and crew compared to traditional green screens. So yeah, that's what it is. It's an AR wall.
Augmented reality. Yeah.
Yep. I don't know. I guess we'll see where this goes. I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle on this one. But I do think, and this is one of the, as they point out in the article, this is one of the things that the strike was about. They needed assurances that they were not going to be replaced by artificial intelligence, whether it was cloning of their voice, cloning of their image, right, and all of that kind of stuff.
You wouldn't, I wouldn't want you to recreate my voice and my appearance.
Right.
And say it's me.
Exactly.
Unless you pay me. But if you pay me, cool.
You pay me enough.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like those comedians that are getting backlash for going over to overseas and doing the whole Riyadh thing. They're basically saying, they paid me enough. I literally saw this quote. They paid me enough to look the other way. Okay. All right. So, you know, I guess money does talk. It can't override ethics.
All right. So Microsoft cuts off cloud services to Israeli military unit after report of storing Palestinians' phone calls. This is from, where's it from?
This is from CNBC.
So Microsoft has cut off cloud storage and AI services to Israel's Unit 8200 after finding evidence supporting reports that the military unit used its technology to store and analyze Palestinians' phone calls. The move follows employee protests over the company's role in Israel's Gaza invasion and comes shortly after a UN commission accused Israel of genocide. Microsoft President Brad Smith said the decision was tied to privacy and trust concerns, crediting The Guardian's reporting while noting Israel may now shift the data to Amazon Web Services. Like, Israel doesn't have their own cloud services yet?
I guess not. I mean, this isn't the first time that stuff like this has happened. I mean, there's some people have been fired at Microsoft because of the fact that they have protested.
Yeah, I read some, that article said the five folks have been fired.
Mm-hmm.
But my first question when I read this snippet was, wait, I thought they weren't supposed to see what's in there. But they saw enough evidence, I guess. They didn't see what it actually was, but it's like, yeah, it looks like that's what they're doing.
Yeah, this evidence includes information relating to IMOD consumption of Azure storage capacity in the Netherlands and the use of AI services, whatever that really means. I don't know what IMOD means, but
yeah.
As employees, we all have a shared interest in privacy protection, given the business value it creates by ensuring our customers can rely on our services with rock solid trust.
Well,
okay.
I mean, so Israel was leaning on that rock solid performance.
Yeah. Yep. As they commit genocide. And yes, I said it. That's exactly what they've done.
Yeah, I'm not really involved.
Well, the UN, I think it was a UN commission. Somebody last week actually came out and said it checks off all the boxes. So
yeah,
we're not over there. I can feel for the people. And to be clear, that's not being anti-Semitic. I have nothing against the Jewish population, the Jewish people. What I have a problem with is the Israeli government, and even their own people have a problem with that. So anyway, but hey, apparently that's all going to go away. So we'll see. Amazon will pay $2.5 billion, with a B, to settle FTC suit that alleged dark patterns in Prime signups. I wasn't aware of any of this because, of course, I've had a Prime account.
Yeah, I've been a Prime subscriber since before this time.
Yeah. So Amazon will pay $2.5 billion to settle an FTC lawsuit accusing it of using dark patterns to trick consumers into Prime memberships and make cancellation difficult. The deal, which does not admit guilt, of course not, sets aside $1.5 billion for customer refunds, up to $51 each of those affected between 2019 and 2025. I know, right? I mean, pay your mortgage off with that. And $1 billion in payments to the FTC. FTC Chair Andrew Ferguson called it a historic win against deceptive subscriptions, while Amazon said it settled to avoid drawn-out appeals and will maintain its current sign-up and cancellation processes under court oversight. $51. Yeah, I wasn't aware this was happening. I think it had something to do with some kind of, it was almost like some kind of game or something from what I remember reading, that people would flow down, and then the next thing you know, they had signed up for Prime. Or
yeah, was, I mean, I get it. It probably happened. But my thing is, this is not a historic win. So Amazon's stock is up 0.5% today.
Mm.
Their market cap is $2.35 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
So 2.5 billion, a billion of which goes to the FCC?
What the FTC.
Whatever.
Yeah.
To the F.
to the fuck you fund.
Organization?
Yeah.
What for?
Penance.
What's the FTC going to use with it?
I think it just goes into the treasury. The
general fund?
Or it's going to...
They're funding CIA black ops is what it is.
No, they're going to use it to help build the... that new ballroom that Trump wants.
How many billions could we not find?
Oh, in the Pentagon?
Could we not account for?
Oh, yeah.
That's where this shit comes in. So $51. So how much did people signing up for Prime actually pay and not mean to? Was it more or less than $51?
Oh, it was more.
There you go.
It was more.
This doesn't count.
Because I think
historic win.
Isn't Prime like $129 or $139 a year?
Something like that, yeah. I mean, back then it was like $99.
I mean, when I started, it was $79.
Yeah. But still, $51.
Yeah, $51.
Yeah, that's not a historic win. Not when the company's valuation is $2.35 trillion.
Yeah. And especially if you've been a Prime subscriber from 2019 to 2025.
That's $2,300 billion.
That hurts my brain.
Yeah.
That hurts my brain.
So, no, not a historic win. These never are. Oh, yeah, we showed them.
I'm going to take the next story so you can do the other one.
Okay.
Trump executive order will hand TikTok over to U.S. investors. Donald Trump signed an executive order transferring TikTok's U.S. operations to a group of American investors, including Oracle co-founder Larry Ellison, Michael Dell, Rupert Murdoch, in a deal reportedly worth $14 billion, which I want to stop right there and say.
Of all of the good guys you could find in this country...
Okay.
You chose those three?
That's a fair point. That is everything I've heard and read about this. TikTok is actually should be valued at closer to $40 billion. So $14 billion is a pretty good deal. Vice President J.D. Vance, who Trump credited with brokering the agreement, said U.S. investors will control TikTok's algorithm to prevent foreign influence, though details of ByteDance's ongoing role remain unclear. The move raises questions about legality under Chinese law, how content and algorithms may differ for U.S. users, and whether Trump allies could influence moderation, though the White House insists the user experience will remain unchanged. Because as we all know, the one thing that sets TikTok apart from everything else is that algorithm. Without that algorithm, TikTok is just Instagram, Reels, and YouTube Shorts. That's it.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
Slop.
Yeah, there's nothing special about it. But
I mean, I wish I could have got in on that. Nobody called me.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'd have given them $5.
See where it goes.
See where it goes. You know, I want a voice. I mean,
I would have given him a couple $1,000s, but I still would not sign up for TikTok.
You could have cashed out your Bitcoin and given it to him.
But nobody asked me.
Yeah. Nope.
I don't have enough money.
Mm-mm.
You know, I was looking into restoring the Sonic here in Tifton.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that a few months ago.
Yeah. And I filled out the form that night and I got an immediate response from their procedures that somebody's put in Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sorry, you don't have enough capital. Like,
how much do you need?
Well, you don't know what I'm asking you. Mm-hmm. I can't get past this fucking form. There's a Sonic ready to turn the lights back on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to build anything.
Yeah. How much capital do you need? What is this, $1 million, $2 million?
I think it's like 2.5 you probably need to be worth.
Wow.
Like, shit, I'm trying to make the money. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like trying to build credit when you're up and coming. Yeah, it's like,
catch 22.
I need credit to get credit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's...
I'm like, well, that's where this ends.
Yeah.
Oh. So... A startup used AI to make a psychedelic without the trip. And this is from an article in Wired. Mindstate Design Labs, a Y Combinator-backed startup, supported by founders of OpenAI, Neuralink, and others, has used AI to develop a psychedelic-like drug that induces positive mental effects without hallucinations. I think ecstasy does that.
I've never tried it.
I've only read about it. Its first candidate, MSD-001, a formulation of 5-MeO-MIPT. I'm not sure what MIPT is, but showed in phase 1 trials. And again, they didn't call me for phase 1 trials.
Yeah, you'd have been more than happy to.
Showed in phase 1 trials that it was safe, well-tolerated, and produced heightened emotions, imagination, and brighter perception, but no quote-unquote trip. Brain imaging confirmed it generated patterns similar to classic psychedelics, suggesting it may deliver therapeutic benefits tied to neuroplasticity without the risks of disorientation or overwhelming experiences. And then this means... this went so well, it's only going to be about 100 more years before it's widely available in the U.S.
5-MeO-MIPT. The street name for it is Moxie.
Okay.
It's a synthetic psychedelic substance classified as a tryptamine, structurally similar to the designer substance 5-MeO-DIPT, which is foxy-methoxy. Legal status and reported effects of 5-MeO-MIPT can vary depending on location and the amount used. So that's what that is. That's Moxie. Hmm. You got some Moxie. I love that Foxy Methoxy. Okay.
So they're just making shit up.
It sounds like it. I mean, this was an AI overview from from Google. So Gemini, is that? Yeah, that's their thing. Mm-hmm. Gemini. All right. Yeah, well, they didn't call you.
Yeah, I would. I prefer the natural remedies,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, I would say classic remedies. But you know, LSD is not organic.
No,
but psilocybin is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And if they can get the effects of psilocybin or LSD or even DMT,
mm-hmm.
Without the full trip, and prove that it's safe.
Yeah.
Shit. But that shit in a crop duster, man.
I guess that's what I like about the Super Sevens, even though I take it in small doses, is the fact that there is no trip involved. I mean, I don't see God or, yeah. you know, anything like that. It gives me a sense of well-being.
It takes the anxiety away.
Yeah.
It takes the edge off and you could just relax. You can think, you can express yourself without tripping up.
Yeah. And then if I take too much, I wind up having to lay on the bed and just stay there until the next morning.
But I've overdone it with the cannabis and, you know, I'll be confident that I'm not going to throw up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not confident that I can move myself, so I'll just sit down and I'll go to sleep, and that is the best sleep I have ever had. I'll wake up so well rested, even after a few hours.
Yeah, yeah. That one time I took that, I've only taken it a whole one once, and I kept flirting with that. Am I going to throw up? Am I going to throw up? And then finally just laid on the bed and told my daughter, I said, can you lock the doors and all? Because if I get up off this bed, then I may have to run to the bathroom. But if I can just lay here, everything's good. Life is great. I'm going to close my eyes and I will see y'all next week. And that was a really good night's sleep. So, but now I don't take any more than maybe half of one of the gummies, but most of the time I cut them up in quarters still.
Mm.
And that's, I try to take it no later than 8 o'clock. My sweet spot's between 7 and 7:30.
Yeah.
So then it finally, and here's something I found that's interesting. I don't know if it's correlation, causation or whatever, but if I take that quarter of the gummy and then I eat chocolate, the effect seems more pronounced. And kicks in faster than if I don't eat the chocolate.
I found when I was toying with the mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
and with any edible, if I take a couple of bites of whatever I'm about to eat,
mm-hmm.
and then take my drugs, and then finish the meal, it kicks in much faster, like within an hour.
Yeah, it's like It's like it primes the pump because the stomach's
I think your metabolism is triggered and it starts to ramp up.
Yeah.
And then when you throw that in there while it's getting going.
That's probably what's happening with the chocolate. And I can say too that it, you know, if I have it right after a meal, I think I get the same effect. But most of the time we eat between 5 and 6 if we're going to eat anything for supper. And so then I usually won't take it, like I said, until between 7 and 7:30. And then I'm also snacking on my dessert. I have a Kit Kat. I have a Kit Kat Mini and then 2 Reese's. I have this methodology where I'll, it sounds ridiculous. I'll take the mini Kit Kat. I'll break off one, eat it. Then I'll eat the 2 Reese's and then I'll follow that up with the last Kit Kat.
You sandwich it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and because the tastes are different and I like both of them. So, but I want to start out with a Kit Kat and I want to end with a Kit Kat. So yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
It's not weird. It's you.
It's me. It's me. But all right. Last thing. Seattle's tin can reinvents the landline phone for kids. I laughed when I saw this. Seattle startup tin can, T-I-N-C-A-N, 2 words, is reinventing the landline for kids, offering retro style phones that let children call friends and family without the risk of early smartphone use. Created by parrot Chet Kittleson, the $75 devices plug into routers or Wi-Fi and only work with parent-approved numbers, giving kids independence while easing parental worries. Families say the phones help kids build genuine connections, avoid screen distractions, and even spark spontaneous play dates, all while reviving the nostalgic thrill of racing to answer a ringing landline. What do you think about this?
I love it. I can't love it any more than I already do. I was just thinking of, I was watching some movie from the early 2000s or maybe the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And at home, he just had a phone on a desk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just how it was back in the day. And I thought, you know, it would be nice to just have a house phone. And if I'm not home, you can't find me.
You can't. Yeah.
If I'm not home.
Yeah.
Come over. Come to where I am or just wait till I'm home. Yeah, I love it.
There is something nostalgic, especially with our generation. Of when's the first time, did you ever get a phone in your room growing up?
Yeah, it was late.
Mm-hmm.
I was 11 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I was actually older than that, but see, I also got my own phone line.
Oh yeah. That was never going to happen.
Yeah. But I was working part-time and I was paying for my phone line, but I was also doing bulletin board stuff. So mm-hmm. I literally ran a Wildcat BBS on my line for a little while, and I was also using it to call other bulletin boards, but it was almost like this weird rite of passage to not only have a telephone in your room, but to have your own phone number, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, is he a drug dealer or what? You know, here's my card. Here's my number. Call me anytime. So now Lee and her sister, they had telephones in their rooms, but they didn't have their own dedicated number or line. And of course, with their father working for the railroad, he was on call. So A, there couldn't be any phone calls after 9 o'clock. And B, they had a certain amount of time that they could only be on the phone. And this, of course, would have been before call waiting was even a mm-hmm. thing, because this would have been the early 80s. I don't think we got call waiting until, what, the late 80s, early 90s, somewhere in there.
We didn't have it on our line until sometime in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, but it was almost like, it was one of those things of having a little bit of freedom, I think.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your friends could call you, you could call them, and especially, you know, I'm not being sexist, but I think more girls wound up probably hogging the phone, you know, talking to their girlfriends and what have you,
yeah,
than dudes would. That's not to say that guys didn't call and shoot the shit and all of that, but it's so funny. I mean, they essentially, when I saw this, I was like, so he made a VoIP phone.
Yeah.
In the style of the old style telephones.
But under the control of the parents, where the parents could, you know, yeah, said you can only call these numbers.
There's an app that's associated with the phone. I think it's cool.
I think it's neat.
Of course, it does remind me of something that Network Chuck did. Of course, not everybody can do this. You have to be in IT, but he has an entire video where he set up his own phone server. And I think he used 3CX. He might have used something else, but he set up his own phone server. And then he used ATAs so that he could give his girls old analog classic phones and still be able to call each other. They got tickled. They would call each other from room to room and stuff like that. But it was all... So it was essentially, it was very similar to this, except there was no app to control like who you could call or whatever. I mean, he could have done that kind of stuff in the interface, but just to have an app on your phone, which is, here's the irony. To prevent the kids from having early smartphone usage, you put in an old style telephone that requires you have an app on a smartphone to control the calling criteria for your children.
Yeah, but that smartphone app's not part of your kids' experience.
No, that's fair, but I just thought it was hilarious. Yeah. It's like we're trying to prevent them from getting on these screens too early, but we want them to be able to communicate with their friends and maybe, you know, give them a different viewpoint of the way things used to be. But I also have to have this app over here on my phone to control it.
Yeah. But, yeah, I dream of the day. You know, the second I retire, I think I'm just going to block everybody except my kids.
Yeah.
And family members and whatnot. So if you want to get a hold of me, you got to call the house. And there's going to be a plain old telephone next to my recliner.
That's still going to run over VoIP, but yeah,
but it's going to ring like an old telephone would.
When we first moved here in 06, we brought our regular analog phone, wall mount, had the little micro cassette for the
answering machine,
yeah. Slapped that on the wall, and we got Mediacom internet and telephone bundle through them at the time because I had not built this area.
Yeah.
So for a number of years, we did have a home phone number and a home phone that rarely got used.
Yeah.
Rarely got used. And I mean, the only non-cell phones that we have in this house are the two that are sitting in this room right here with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're all basically business related.
Yeah. I mean, it's still going to be VoIP. Because I want to be able to go, you know, after 9 o'clock, that motherfucker's not going to ring.
Well, as far as I know, and especially here, even if you've got copper coming up to the side of the house, it's still VoIP.
Yeah.
So if it's AT&T or whoever, and if it's going through any of the cable companies, it's VoIP.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, their website is 10can.kids. That's a domain, and it's a picture of a little girl sitting in a chair at a desk with her feet propped up with an old yellow style two-piece phone. Get your tin can, all talk, no smarts. Yeah, that one's fun. $75 for a regular, the old style white cradle type.
You know, I was just thinking the other day, can you even buy one of those? Like, can you go to Walmart and get a $10 POTS phone?
Well, I know you can get the multi handset cordless ones, and they do run. They do connect to a standard POTS
line. I'm not doing that shit. I want a cord.
Okay, telephone. I'm looking at Walmart right now. VTech corded phone with redial button.
Ooh,
$13.32.
Fuck yeah! Send it.
Yeah, you can get it.
But I need one with those big ass buttons so I can see the numbers.
Yeah, it's that.
Sweet.
Yeah, under $14. Power free operation. VTech standard phone operates without the need for AC power, ensuring functionality even during power outages. Last number redial, adjustable receiver volume, ringer control, secure handset location, and reliable during outages.
Bullshit, because it's VoIP.
It's VoIP because, I mean, it might be reliable Because if it's connected to, an ATA, the ATA is providing the dial tone power and all. But if the power's out.
If the ATA's not powered.
Yeah, you're dead. You're dead, kiddo.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our stories.
You know, I've been off of social media all week. I know it's Wednesday. It's like day three, but
I mean,
I've not opened Twitter all week.
Really?
Yeah.
Twitter's easy for me to say I haven't opened it in a week.
Well, I haven't bothered Facebook in years.
But, well, I'm primarily on Blue Sky and Instagram/Threads, which Threads actually, I think it was last week, actually surpassed Twitter as having the most amount of online people during a 24-hour period or something like that. Mm. So Threads has finally gotten up there. I don't know what their user count is, but yeah, I mainly hang out on Blue Sky, Instagram/Threads, and I check out Facebook about once a day, first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And that's primarily to look in if there's anything going on in our group that we need to kibosh or I'll go to Valdosta Radio Station. It's a talk radio station down in Valdosta. And there's a show called The Morning Drive with Bill Osborne. And I will, they stream it on Facebook because it's all talk. So they don't have to worry about copyright issues and music and stuff. I wish these people would learn how to stream because it's completely vertical. It's horrendous. It looks god awful. But I usually check in for about no more than 2 minutes because there's generally some asshole on the phone talking to him and I'll just leave it at that. And I can't stomach it much more. It's definitely a conservative right leaning radio station. Cause I think they have Hannity. They carry his radio.
So you get on there, just piss yourself off.
I do.
What's the whole point?
I doom scroll every morning. I doom scroll every morning.
Try not to.
Well, I don't know. I fear
you're missing something.
Well, I think I'm suffering from the true definition of insanity because I go there to listen to see, I have hope for humanity. And my hopes.
You get on there and you go, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Every day.
Just quit
doing it.
I'm pretty sure I'm insane.
I mean, I didn't find things to swear about on Twitter. I just found that some of these guys are doing stuff that I'll never reach. And so I was a quick comparing myself to.
Yeah.
These guys who seem to be having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't know. It's.
I've had a better week, I think.
I still feel I have to keep up with the news. I need to know what's going on.
I don't. Ignorance is truly bliss.
I wish I could feel that way, but I can't. I just can't. I can back off some of it, but I gotta have my finger on the pulse of what's going on. I need to know. I don't know why.
We need to get you in that phase two trial for that synthetic psychedelic.
Probably. Probably need it. All right. Well, I guess we're going to wrap it up here. Maybe next episode we'll have Sam back with us.
Yeah. Sorry, I was a bore.
Yeah, exactly right. Whatever. Anyway, check out all the podcast episodes at southgeeknews.com. You can leave a voicemail by going to southgeeknews.com/voicemail. If you want to leave us a voicemail, talk about anything that we discussed here, send us an email. The email address is podcast@southgeeknews.com. And that's pretty much it. At the bottom of the show notes, you'll have my socials, you have Sam's socials, and you'll have Ben's one social.
Which one?
Your Instagram.
Oh.
You know, okay. My, that looks tasty. Yep.
I did post a couple of times on Twitter last week, though. So,
well, you've posted, do you know? I think during your trip, you actually posted on your Instagram some of the foods that you were eating.
Likely, yeah.
But that's been a couple of months now. Well, that was back in July.
Yeah.
Yep. And now I'm looking at this and it's making me hungry. Damn it, Ben.
Well, you could put my Zitter handle on there if you want.
Which one is that?
At 42 Flows.
42 Flows, that's right. Yeah, I could add that if I remember. If I don't, I don't.
Yeah.
Bro.
I won't be asking next time. I won't wonder.
I'll try to remember to put it in there. Anyway, that's it, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed making it for you.
Ta-ta.
We'll talk to you later. Bye. This has been a production of Tifton Media Works. Check out all our podcasts by visiting TiftonMediaWorks.com.